Alaskans, we're still dealing with a pandemic. Longer nights and seasonal affective disorder don't make it any easier. We encourage you to take care of both your mental and physical health this winter. Get outside. Enjoy traditional foods. Connect with your community. And keep your body moving. Let's take care of ourselves and each other.
Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isla Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. Many voices are highlighted in the Dene Reader, an anthology of Navajo literature, to bring more light and understanding to the life and culture of the Dene people. Aimed at teachers and students, this resource of knowledge provides a starting point for a deeper exploration of literature that's crafted by more than 30 Dene writers, poets, and artists. Stay tuned for our December Book of the Month, where we visit with those behind this artful volume of knowledge.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonio Gonzalez. This week, Charles Sams III was sworn in as director of the National Park Service. He's the first Native American to hold the position. The Mountain West News Bureau's Robin Vincent says tribal leaders reserve high hopes for his appointment.
Stephen Fasthorse is a councilman with the Northern Arapaho Tribe in Wyoming. He says when Charles Sams was confirmed by the Senate last month, it stopped him in his tracks. Still, he says, it was a long time coming.
Who better to be the stewards of the land than those to entrust in helping manage the lands than the original peoples of this land?
Fasthorse points out many of America's national parks contain land that's sacred to Native Americans, like in the Grand Canyon and Yellowstone. The federal government took many of these lands from tribal nations, and Sams has said he'll work to illuminate that history. He's also said he'll center the perspectives of Native Americans in his work. Fasthorse believes that includes placing a bigger focus on climate change and how it's transforming these special places. For National Native News, I'm Robin Vincent.
A big conference about the Colorado River wrapped up in Las Vegas Thursday. The river provides power and water to millions of people on farms, towns, and reservations across the West, including Colorado, Utah, Nevada, New Mexico, and Wyoming. But the picture of the river isn't good right now. It's been hammered by a prolonged drought. Its two largest reservoirs are at their lowest levels on record. There was a lot of talk at the conference about increased collaboration between tribes and states along the Colorado, especially as officials begin negotiating new rules for managing the river next year. Tribes have been historically excluded from negotiations in the past. Dwight Lomiza is vice chairman of the Colorado River Indian Tribes in Arizona. He says his tribes do have a seat at the table this time around, but he's skeptical.
We're, you know, always a victim of a lot of promises, but no results. So that's been our history. So we're just going to It's kind of a wait and see right now.
The Colorado River Indian tribes have some of the most senior water rights along the river. And that story comes to us from Nate Hedgie at the Mountain West News Bureau. The Yurok tribe issued an emergency declaration this week in response to what it said was a spate of missing persons and attempted human trafficking incidents on the Northern California Reservation and in the town of Arcata, where it says there is a large number of cases involving missing and murdered indigenous women. Tribal Chairman Joseph L. James advised members to not go alone into town and to let family members know when they expect to return. The Yurok Tribal Court received reports from seven Yurok women over the last month who said they were approached by would-be traffickers. All made it to safety, but in October, one Hoopa woman, Emily Rising, went missing, and she has not been found. The Yurok and Hoopa Valley tribes are offering a $20,000 reward for information leading to her safe return. In New Mexico, the state Senate voted to redraw its own political districts Thursday, following hours of debate that centered on the priorities of a coalition of Native American tribes and pueblos. Source New Mexico reports the map put forth by the coalition represented a historic consensus that took months to reach. Members said it honored their growing voting power in state politics and right to self-determination. The map also drew two Hispanic Republican senators into the same district, which will require them to run against each other or move, or one of them must quit. The map the coalition supports, along with one introduced by Senator Linda Lopez and approved by the Senate, would also reduce the Hispanic majority Senate districts in the state from 16 to 15. Republican senators argued that the map is diluting Hispanic strength in favor of Native Americans. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
The Indian Arts and Crafts Board promotes Indian artists of federally recognized tribes through its online source directory. Information on this no-charge opportunity available at doi.gov/IACB, who support this program. Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Tara Gatewood coming to you live from my homeland, so share with Dui. From creatives to academics, this collection found in the Dine Reader, an anthology of Navajo literature, is filled with nonfiction prose, fiction, and poetry. They're gifts to a deeper understanding of Dine history and the lives of those who made it. This special collection of words and thoughts also includes interviews with different Dine people whose work fills the different sections of the book. Not only is it a resource to teachers and students, it's also a powerful look at the identity and beauty of a nation that has always celebrated its connection to the land and respect for generations that came before. Today on our December Book of the Month, we will be sharing 10 copies of this book with the first 10 callers to make it on air, who ask their questions, give their comments, and they are courtesy of the University of Arizona Press. And so there's a lot to discover in this book, so let's go ahead and meet one of the editors to find out more about this collection and exactly what we can find in it. My pleasure to welcome in Esther Blinn, who joins us today out of Durango, Colorado. She is a citizen of the Navajo Nation and an acclaimed Diné writer. My pleasure to have her here with us. Welcome to Native America Calling, Esther, and please feel free to further introduce yourself.
Thank you, Tara. Yat e Esther Blinn Yinishia Loge Dine Nishla Turichitni Bashishin Tachitni Dashanila. Thank you for having us to celebrate this great project that I helped create with three other editors. And I'm very excited also to talk with your listeners about this.
Thank you, Esther. And so there's a lot in this collection of words, and they're more than words. They are gateways to people's lives and definitely Diné culture. And just walk us through exactly what we find in this book.
You are correct. There are many entry points for, I would almost say, any type of person who's interested in Navajo literature. You know, I think the heart of the book really is to inspire younger and emerging Diné writers. But I think there's also a place, a special place for educators who are really trying to do so many things and now have a book that can assist in their teaching skills by offering such a great representation of Navajo poetry and prose, which also includes cultural maps, a Diné directional knowledge and symbols, and also a great resource in the back. We have a chronology of the important dates in Diné political and literary history and resources for teachers and readers, as well as a very extensive bibliography.
And you are tuned in to Native America Calling. This is our December Book of the Month. With us are the voices who are behind a very important book that has come out, and I'm seeing it being hailed by many people in the education field as a resource to bring more awareness and understanding to Diné literature. On the line with us is Esther Belen. And Esther, I do want to ask you more about your own contributions to the book, and tell us about the Esther we find in this great publication.
Thank you for that question. Part of my contribution was very intentful in the sense that, you know, as an editor, we were really looking at selected pieces to create a diverse perspective of what Navajo people are writing about and the styles that they're writing in. So I chose some pieces that add to that. I am, you know, one of many urban Indians, but within the book, I think that perspective I chose to hit on to make more of an impression. So I do have some of those pieces here, and I also have some experimental pieces that are visual poems.
And Esther, explain a little bit of what would you mean by visual poems?
Sure. So I have started to use, you know, abstract symbols and various things on the page of the book, kind of like maps, to create a verbal interaction, a nonverbal interaction with the reader. In that, part of that process for me was to help me gain a perspective and gain empathy when I think about the early boarding school students, and in particular my parents, who had to not only adapt super quickly, but, you know, undergo aversive and at times racist tactics to become educated while learning the English language. And so just really processing that and using a lot of those visual poems as entryways to have people kind of understand what it's like to give meaning to letters.
And so, Esther, just thinking about the way you can really use letters to communicate, and then those letters together as words, Does that fascinate you?
Well, it does. I mean, we give meaning to these symbols, right? I think it's very different when we talk about language and language usage, because once we give meaning to those symbols on a page, it has a different record. It has a different type of impression. And I feel like the way I see Navajo people using their language, especially in poetry and attending poetry readings, it's similar, but it's also very different. The language takes on more of a context based on the situation where you hear it.
And so when we think about all of the different things that, you know, Indigenous writers, specifically Dene writers in this project, are using words to convey a story that often isn't heard. For you, just seeing how many people are in this collection, what does that make you think of?
Well, it really makes me think of our strength as a people, that we are able to, again, master another technique that, you know, was not intended for us to master, that we really were able to craft it. And I'm talking about the English language, right? I really feel that we have, as a people and writers, have adapted that and are really able now to use it to convey our history, our literary Dene history and our stories, and also encourage and really contribute in a way that's, I think, you know, gaining more momentum, and that we're able to now be part of discussions around what Native American writing is and different craft elements that the Dene people use in their writing.
And Esther, we got about a minute before break here, and just you know, thinking about what this could mean for educators, I know there are always calls for more resources. If there are specific educators who are listening today and do want to connect with this resource, what are the best ways?
Well, you know, the most obvious way is really just to buy the book. The book is created for folks who really just want to know more about Navajo writers and our history with writing. It has an amazing foreword by Sherwin Bitsui. It has a great chronology that from Jennifer Dennettdale. Both of those are scholars. We partnered with Michael Thompson, who's a longtime educator in the Four Corners, to bring on the teachers' resources. So it really has little niches here and there for educators to have a foundation and to be able to build off of.
Sure. And I know those are very welcome. Now's your time to talk. Go ahead and call in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to hearing from you today here on Native America Calling. Phone lines are open. We're also giving away 10 copies of the book. We'll do that right after the break. So go ahead and dial in 1-800-996-2848.
To expand their economic development opportunities, some tribes are taking their businesses overseas. From high tech to tourism to nation-to-nation partnerships with international companies, these activities are reaping rewards. We'll hear about it and take your calls on the next Native America Calling.
The Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention remind you there are now booster recommendations for all three available COVID-19 vaccines in the United States. You may choose which COVID-19 vaccine you receive as a booster shot. Getting the COVID-19 vaccination protects you, your family, and your community. More information at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and it is our December Book of the Month, and we are taking a look at the Dine Reader, an anthology of Navajo literature. There are many different authors who have offered their words over the years, and this book is a collection of some of it. It's kind of an entryway into understanding how much contributions have been made. And we are also inviting you into this conversation. If you would like to share some words about what you're hearing, go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. With us today is Esther Blinn, and she is telling us a little bit more about it. And Esther, for you, this is also a chance to just see some of the work that has been out there. Go ahead and tell us more about some of the people that are almost kind of historical and iconic in Dine literature that are also being featured.
Yes, we have such an amazing array of writers and artists. And I say artists because many of the contributors here are also visual artists. And we have such a diverse group of people, and there's also a common thread with many of the writers in that almost half of them have an affiliation with the Institute of American Indian Arts, either when it was a high school at the very beginnings, or where they have graduated in the MFA in creative writing program. And so there's always been a really unique history. And the book begins with highlighting Black Horse Mitchell, who started a book while he was a high school student at the IAIA. And it was actually published in 1967. A couple of years before the so-called, renaissance of Native Lit, which a lot of people attribute to N. Scott Momaday's Housemaid of Dawn, which came out in 1969. So we have some of those writings from early on, but even prior to that, I think there's a really strong boarding school literary history that we have. And in our introduction, we talk about that. We talk about a book that came out in the 1920s that was published by the U.S. government as an example of Navajo kids being able to use the English language. And that was, so we included a couple of those poems in the introduction just to highlight that a lot of Navajo students were writing poetry in the English language. And actually it was published in 1937. And so I think that was one really fascinating thing to look at, was that in the 30s that some of the early writers were learning poetry in the boarding schools, and they were using it as a medium to help the students learn the English language. And we also highlight, there's so many people to highlight, but we have two of the Navajo Nation Poet Laureates. The first Poet Laureate is Lucy Tapahunso. The current Poet Laureate is Laura Tohi. And I mean, when you look throughout the book, numerous contributors have received recognition for their writing, winning prizes, different book awards. And so almost everyone is refreshing to read, because it, to me, that just tells, you know, and affirms that people are ready for Navajo people to be writing and to writing their own stories using their own poetics. And so we really just welcome that.
Well, I certainly welcome it, because there is some really great work when all of this does happen. And I think it's just really encouraging, too, that these works are available for other Diné writers. Maybe somebody who thought their words weren't important enough to be put in a book, or somebody who's been left out of the circle in the highlighting of some of this stuff. And so it's really encouraging just to hear what is being brought forward. If you'd like to join us, you can always give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Let's go ahead and share some books with our listening audience. We're going to say hi to Barbara, who is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Barbara, thank you for reaching out. You're on air.
My relatives within the Pueblos and all across the nation.
Good to hear from you, Barbara. And wondering about what people are thinking hearing about this. Looks like we might have gotten cut off from Barbara, so give us a ring if you can. You can join us too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls. And you know what, Esther, we have two of the contributors on the line with us today. And I want to bring in one who joins us today out of Vancouver Island, British Columbia, Canada. She is an enrolled citizen of the Navajo Nation. It is Danielle Geller. But before I do, Esther, is there anything you'd like to share about the contributions that you're excited that Danielle has made to this collection?
Yes, we are very excited to celebrate the work that Danielle has. She just has a memoir that came out that's very well received. You know, once you start reading it, you really can't put it down. And I support all of her work. And I love the fact that she is out in Vancouver and really developing those skills of kind of embracing our First Nations relatives and bridging that connection to those of us who are in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's meet her. Danielle Geller, my pleasure to bring you in. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Hi. Thank you for inviting us here to talk about this amazing collection, Tara. And thank you, Esther, for your kind words. She'e Danielle Geller, Yenisya, Sitnan Dene Neshwa, Vilagana Dashishchim, Tabaha Dashishche, Vilagana Dashnala.
Thank you for that, Danielle. And, you know, let's just continue to tell folks what they can find in this book. Tell us about things that that you contributed to this collection.
Yeah, so one of my flash creative nonfiction essays made it into this book. The title is Blood Quantum. It comes from a time where I was just returning to my family. I was sort of exploring my identity as a Diné person, woman, after my mother passed away. And one of the ways I was trying to understand my relation to my family and to my people and to sort of even the wider world was by going back to these documents, you know, whether it was my certificate of Indian blood or my birth certificate. I was adopted by my white grandmother, and sort of grappling with the, I don't know, the inadequacy of that kind of documentation or what those things might say about who I was.
And through that discovery, what are some of the things that you used writing to really spell out or maybe even interpret for yourself about your own journey?
Yeah. That's a good question. I think that one of the things I came to appreciate as I was writing this essay, but also as I was working on my book, was the power of silence and all that is unknown, but also known in those spaces of maybe even what isn't said. And, you know, before I really reconnected with my family, I was already exploring and reading works about Zenith, like philosophy and thought. There was a book by, it was sort of curated by Lloyd E. Lee that included voices talking about Hosho and Zenith philosophy. And so this idea of walking in beauty and reconnecting with my mother's way of seeing the world, those all became really central and important to me.
And Danielle, something that I read with some of the authors is a lot of inspiration from other Diné writers, and you name some folks too who have helped guide you on your path. But when there is something like this to just kind of maybe even get the spark going, or even, you know, let those who are turning to the power of the word, let them find a path to help let their talent and their creativity loose, what does it mean to know that there are others who have worked on this, who have forged some of this path? Does that provide a certain special type of encouragement?
Yeah, it does. You know, I think part of it was as I was reading these Navajo writers, especially. I don't know. It made me feel less alone, and it helped me. It helped me find a way of being in conversation with not just ideas, but also with my elders, or you know, people who I felt had something to teach me or could teach me or just stand in relation to me.
Well, I'm glad that you are finding that from all of this in this project. And Danielle, when it comes to your own work and getting it out there, what is the most important thing that you feel your words are saying to the world?
You know, I'm a person who right now in my life is writing a lot about loss, about grief, and trying to establish a stronger connection to the family that I do have, or the family that I've found, and a place to call home. And I found it really difficult to move away from Arizona. It was the first place that I really felt at home. And to move up here to Vancouver Island, where I'm a visitor on the unceded territory of the Lekwungen people. And so I'm now in the process of trying to figure out my relation to the communities here and how to preserve my connection back home. And I think I'm not really answering the question you asked, but that's sort of where I am right now is, you know, I am a citizen of our nation, but I'm also sort of exploring what it means to be a visitor here.
Mm-hmm. And for you, what would you like to say to somebody out there who doesn't feel that their writing is good enough to pursue, to share with others? Because a lot of times there are things that push people away from seeing their writing as something that, A, is special and something that the world needs to see. What's your message to those? Or maybe who have straight up been told this isn't good enough because it is in a context in the way we speak in our communities or the way we've been raised. Anything you want to say to that listener?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm trying to get my thoughts. You know, I think that one of the things I love about this collection is the work that the editors did to place these words in context and sort of like the world or the community that is then made in this anthology. And I think for people who are starting out writing or are feeling worried about the work they're producing, it really is important to connect with those local communities, your local communities of writers, and what they're producing or putting out there. And so in our community, there are now a lot of avenues or vehicles. Amber McCrary has started Abalone Mountain Press and is looking to elevate our voices. And there's now like the Emerging Dene Writers Institute and, a strong or solid writing program at Dene College. And so I think that there are more opportunities for writers to stand in community and to figure out a way of approaching their work or their writing that maybe isn't, I don't know, it's so westernized, that opens up for more ways of writing.
Mm-hmm. And Esther, any thoughts on that too? And of course, that message to the person who's doubting their ability to write or that the world is ready to see their work. Real quick, anything to share, Esther?
Yeah, I think just really emphasizing that every Dene writer's voice is welcome. I mean, when you think of literature and our field within Native American literature, we are lucky to have, known this group of 30 people. And as Danielle was talking, I was thinking some of my favorite writers are in this collection. And I love that. I mean, that just brings me such comfort. So I feel like we still have so much room for more. And so we just welcome everyone. And I love the resources that Danielle cited. We have younger people now who are bolstering writers in supports for platforms and for conferences and workshops. And so we're really in that movement right now, which is a very exciting time.
Yes, it is. And we're going to continue in this exciting time. It's an exciting day for us because we are connecting you with a resource that is featuring the work of many Dene creatives. It is called The Dene Reader, an anthology of Navajo literature. All kinds of stuff is in it, including poetry, nonfiction, fiction prose, and we're hearing from some of the people who put their words to the paper. If you'd like to talk with them directly, go ahead and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We are also giving away copies of this book. Now is the time to dial if you'd like to connect with this book and those who are involved in making it possible. Give us a ring right now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And you can ask your questions, too. The floor is open for that. To do it, all you got to do is dial in 1-800-996-2848.
Mesa Lands Community College can help you lead the way in your chosen field. At Mesa Lands, where 1 in 3 students is Native American, you get hands-on opportunities working one-on-one with instructors in wind energy, where students go up the turbine in their first semester, silversmithing with access to the largest foundry in the Southwest, and blacksmithing in the cowboy arts. Mesa Lands has a national top 10 rodeo team, too. Info and applications at mesalands.edu. Mesa Lands Community College supports this program.
Thanks for tuning in today here on Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, standing right here in Isleta Pueblo, talking to you directly. Studio 49 is live, and we are ready for you to join us on our December Book of the Month. And we are featuring a book that is quite the collection. It's called The Dene Reader, an anthology of Navajo literature. And on the line are several Dene creatives. If you'd like to talk with them directly, you can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we are giving away 10 copies to our first 10 callers to make it on air. To get one, all you got to do is dial in. There are plenty to share with you today, so go ahead and dial in now. Again, the number is 1-800-996-2848. also want to introduce you to another voice from the book. We have Netanya Ann Pulley with us today on the line, and she is Dene and a writer. Thank you for giving us a call, or thank you for dialing in to us, Netanya, and tell me more about your contributions to the book, and of course, introductions. If you'd like to further introduce yourself, please do.
Thank you so much. Netanya Yunishakia Ananishla Belagana Bashas Che Pachini Dashas Che Ado Belagana Dashanula. Thank you so much for creating a space for us to talk about this wonderful collection. It's such an honor to be part of it. And every time we kind of hear about it in different ways or different reviews or talk to different people about it, there's always so many more exciting things to find. And it really shows that intentionality in the editors. And I always appreciate that. My piece in this collection is a short story. I was so excited when it got accepted because it's a story, like a lot of my writing, it's a bit experimental. There are moments where we don't know if we are in a dream space or, you know, what we call a reality space, that kind of reading. And for this particular story, when it's read by non-Native people, you know, there's always a question to me about, you know, well, what is it? Is this character dreaming or is this real? And having this story in a collection like this, you know, I don't get that question from the new readers that are trying to kind of put that scope on top of my story. And that is something that is so beautiful and so welcoming and healing to have editors, to have readers who like get it and aren't questioning those poetics and those devices with the same kind of measurement that you get maybe in a grad program or by non-Native writers, right? We are setting our own standards in what language can do, what story can do, what our role as storytellers are. And it's just, it's a beautiful thing. And I'm also just really excited to be here with Danielle and with Esther.
Well, in that same sentiment, what are your thoughts about just all the great work that's being highlighted?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it is a landscape. It's an environment to read through this where, you know, some anthologies and some readers that are focused on a group of people or a time period, they read as if you are supposed to read through them and kind of get a summary of what that literature is about, so that at the end you have a solid paragraph to describe what that literature is. And this reader doesn't do that. This reader asks us to engage story by story, word by word, song by song, and to allow ourselves to enter these different places. And I think that is something that, you know, something I didn't have as a young Dene writer. It was out there, but it wasn't in a collection for me. And so it took a long time to kind of go through all the different kinds of Dene writing and Native writers to see where I fit and where I don't fit. And, you know, a lot of comparing and trying to assess myself in this, large spectrum of people and writing. But a collection like this, I think, says that there are many ways to do this thing. There's many ways to be human. There's many ways to tell stories or express your voice. And despite all of those different craft methods, all those different styles, the heart of us is still here, right? The things that we are thinking about and concerned about. So my story in this collection came from an anxiety of how to remember my relatives, because my mom you know, she tells me the stories of everybody. And there's so many names and so many people. And, I, you know, it's been hard for me to follow and to be able to, I guess, have that same style of storytelling that's about memory and history as much as it's about, you know, telling a story. And I could do that in imaginative spaces. But I realized that I just had this anxiety that, like, you know, maybe a frustration and maybe in some ways a teenage frustration and an unfair frustration towards my mother to say, like, you know, can you just tell me who my uncle is? Can you just tell me who this cousin is? Instead of, you know, respecting the way in which I was being introduced to my relatives. So the story comes from that anxiety. And in a similar sense, I think that's what this reader does, is that it doesn't say, here's a list of Native writers that you should read, or Dene writers that you should read. It says, here's the story of these people, and here's a story of a certain time and a certain moment, and here's a setting, here's a scene, here's somebody's home, you know, here's somebody's dog. And we hold that, and that becomes our memory, and that becomes our history, which is just as important as, you know, dates and trying to kind of make a family tree or make some sort of kind of linear idea of what family and community means.
Mm-hmm. That's really big, and I think of all of this, you know, we can truly say this is Dene history, period. This is the history of the people. And even through the details, and a lot of times those details are dismissed over time, but they're the details we, the descendants, wonder about, or we, the descendants, find the most revealing about our past generations. And even some of the funny stories or anecdotal moments, they really tell you who your ancestors were or how they made decisions about things or just their reflections on things that were adverse or things that they just found interesting. And I think there's a lot that's revealed that a lot of times when we think of the history of our people, do we take enough time to consider that? I'm asking you, the listener, what do you think about that? Go ahead and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls. And we got some books to share with you, so go ahead and dial in 1-800-996-2848. Natanya, anything to add to that? Any more thoughts?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, as you were speaking, I think that, you know, it's important to remember that our history is our future, right? If we engage in our history as that place of to ask questions and to follow relatives and to think about the connections made and the choices made, then we are also building our future in the moment. And maybe, you know, towards your question of young writers, maybe that's one way to enter into it, is to think about a timelessness as you write, so that you're not kind of putting a pressure on yourself to write something brilliant in that moment that compares to everything around you.
Mm-hmm. And something a lot of times what holds people back from writing is revealing the personal side. A lot of times in society, you know, they teach you to keep it all in, keep it bottled in, don't show that side. What do you think about that? Where writing, it invites you to be vulnerable in that way. Any thoughts, Danielle? Or I'm sorry, Natanya?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I was afraid of writing for a long time, and afraid of nonfiction. And I still, even though I write nonfiction, I still tend to call myself a fiction writer because of that, because it's an area that is vulnerable. But it also means that I'm a caretaker of it, that I have a responsibility of taking care of myself and the people around me. And that means, you know, I don't have like one straight answer of how do you write the personal things. It's moment by moment, you know, story, or, you know, essay by essay. I don't think there's not like one kind of way to enter into those spaces. As long as we're thinking of ourselves as caretakers, of these stories, I think we can be generous towards ourselves and caring about those vulnerable parts. And that's my style. I'm sure there's other people.
Sure. That's a great take on it. Here with us, too, is Danielle Geller and Esther Belen, also connected to this book that we're featuring today, The Dene Reader. And Danielle, any reflections that you want to share? I know we've covered some ground, and just anything more you want to add?
Yeah, no, I really liked the description Natanya gave of the book as a landscape. You know, so much of our work is grounded in the land and in place. And there's something about the collection that really gives you a feeling for the diversity and the scope or the scale of what Dene writing is, not only historically, but now, like as we continue inhabiting that place.
Thanks for that. And Esther, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I would like to add as well, you know, when we're talking about motivations for and how we craft our writing, I feel like a lot of times that comes from that awareness and urgency to really verbalize a lot of the experiences that we've had as Dene. You know, going back to our original teachings, going back to when we were imprisoned at Bosque Redondo, going back to moments of first memory as children, right? And I think it giving those meanings and really visualizing and creating that landscape. I love that that idea that you presented, Natanya, because I felt like, you know, I grew up in LA, and so a lot of my continuity with my tribe was very much fractionated because of federal Indian policies. And many of the stories, I wasn't able to, you know, in regards to Western education, legitimize. And so what happens is then we question our own historians, our tribal historians, and our tribal, you know, practitioners, because, you know, we're really trying to balance these things in life, and I think through the writing that's where we can really have a sort of becoming, right? And I think one thing I also want to add is that, you know, the Navajo writers are so expansive in the sense that, you know, many of the people who are in the book don't just write. I mean, you know, thinking of this right now, I mean, Natanya is a great visual artist. She does a lot of collage and bookmaking things. So does Tina Deschitney, you know, Benea Yazzie and Shanta Begay and Gloria Emerson are these amazing painters, and Sherwin Bitsui as well. So I think we have, you know, when we talk about the writing process, it really isn't just on the page. You know, I do a lot of writing, a lot of verbal writing in my head when I talk about things and talk about projects with people and really get that add to it. And it just keeps culminating until when I'm finally ready to sit down and, you know, collate it, if you will, create an order to it, then it comes. And I think it really is that context of sitting with that information or sitting with that knowledge and honoring it and really developing it through that Dene lens. It's very different than writing, you know, an academic essay, which you know, many people like cram into perhaps, you know, 4 to 6 hours the night before it's due, right? Which, you know, it's a different type of energy, a different type of skill, and also purpose. So a lot of these elements come in, and we won't really know until we talk to the writers. And so one of the you know, really nice thing I love about what's happening here and creating this space for us is that we are able to hear from each other our own stories.
And that goes a very long way. Well, it's going to do it for our last book of the month for 2021. Can you believe we are already rounding out this year? But thank you to everybody we heard from today on the line, Esther Blinn, Danielle Geller, as well as Natanya Ann Pooley, who also has some works that are coming out. You can find more information about her at natanyapooley.com. Thank you to the University of Arizona Press for also providing copies of the Dene Reader, an anthology of Navajo literature. And if you'd like to connect with that book, you can find a link to it on our website, Native America Calling. And we look forward to having you back again as we continue to bring you more programming connected to our Native nations. I'm Tara Gatewood.
With Christmas supplies and gifts in short supply, rest assured Prairie Edge and the Sioux Trading Post have you covered. Botanicals, craft supplies, beads, books, and music. We may not have it all, but we sure have a bunch at prairieedge.com who support this show. Wopila.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Amoy hanyik mama kay maabong miya kung bay cho ismay. Amoy hacho chika am healthcare.gov o amoy hako am humako gigik sikol way kumako gigik kok patas humok chut idop am jut himak centers for Medicare to Medicaid hachip kan.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.